The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Mike Edwards for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Armchair Traveler. For the next half hour, I will be reading to you from the News and Observer. But before we begin our journey on today's Armchair Traveler, please let me remind you that neither the North Carolina Reading Service nor I are endorsing any of the cruises, safaris, tours, or other travel itineraries that might be featured in the articles that we'll be reading. These are selected simply for your enjoyment and edification. You know, Christmas is just a week away, and so on today's Armchair Traveler, let's add a dash of holiday flavor, shall we? First, a couple of stops to learn about jolly old St. Nick and his cadre of helpers. We begin in New York, where Associated Press entertainment writer Leanne Italy's article, Santa Rising, reveals how inflation is affecting Santa's efforts this holiday season. Now, the article appeared in the November 29th, 2022 edition, online edition, of the News and Observer. And we'll start with the photo caption. This photo shows Charles Graves, he's dressed in a Santa Claus outfit, as Santa in Austin, Texas, taken on September the 3rd. And it says, Graves is a rare deaf Santa in his first year donning the red suit as a professional. Don't look for plastic partitions or faraway benches when visiting Santa Claus this year. The jolly old elf is back, pre-pandemic style, and he's got something, or rather got some pressing issues on his mind. Santa Booker, HireSanta.com, has logged a 30% increase in demand this Christmas season over last year after losing about 15% of its performers to retirement or death during the pandemic, said founder and head elf Mitch Allen. He has a Santa database of several thousand with gigs at the Bloomingdale's flagship store in New York, various Marriott properties, and other venues around the United States. Most of Allen's clients have moved back to kids on laps and aren't considering COVID-19 in a major way, he said, but Santa can choose to mask up. Another large Santa agency, Cherry Hill Programs, is back up to its pre-pandemic booking numbers for their 1,400 or so Santas, working at more than 600 malls and other spots this year, said spokesperson Chris Landrup. I can't even explain how excited we are to see everyone's smiles at all locations this season without anything covering up those beautiful faces, she said. Cherry Hill Santas are also free to wear a mask, Landrup said. Among standout Santas still keeping their distance, well, there will be no lap visits at the Macy's flagship store in New York's Herald Square. Santa is seated behind a desk. Some Santas who stayed home the last 2 years out of concern for their health have returned to the ho-ho-ho game, but Allen is desperately trying to refill his pipeline with new performers. Inflation has also taken a bite out of Santa. Many are older, on fixed incomes, and travel long distances to don the red suit. They spend hundreds on their customers and other accoutrements. We're charging the client slightly more, and we're also paying our Santa slightly more, Allen said. Bookings for many Santas were made months in advance, and some work year-round. Allen's Santas will earn between $5,000 to $12,000 this season. A few Santas told the Associated Press they're unbothered by the cost, however. They're not in the Santa profession to make a buck, but to do it out of sheer joy. Allen and other agencies are juggling more requests for inclusive Santas, such as black, deaf, and Spanish-speaking performers. Allen also has a female Santa on speed dial. I haven't been busted yet by the kids, and with one exception by the parents either, said 48-year-old Melissa Rickard, who stepped into the role in her early 20s when the Santa hired by her father's lodge fell ill. To have a child not be able to tell I'm a woman in one sense is the ultimate compliment, because it means I'm doing Santa justice. It cracks my husband up, added Rickard, who lives outside Little Rock, Arkansas. I know there are a lot more of us out there. By mid-November, Rickard had more than 100 gigs lined up through Hire Santa and other means. A lot of it's word of mouth, she said. It's, hey, have you seen the female Santa? Rickard charges roughly $175 an hour as Santa, depending on the job, and donates all but her fuel money to charity. And her beard, well, it's yak hair. Eric Elliott's carefully tinted white beard is the real deal. He and Mrs. Claus, wife Moesha Elliott, went pro this year after first taking on the roles as volunteers in 2007. Both are retired military. They spent weeks in formal Claus training. Among the skills they picked up was American Sign Language and other ways to accommodate people with disabilities. Their work has included trips into disaster zones with the Texas-based nonprofit Lone Star Santas to lend a little cheer. The Elliots, who are black, say breaking into the top tier of Santas as first-time pros in clauses of color hasn't been easy. For some people, Eric said, we understand that we're not the Santa for you. The Santa experience at Mall of America in Bloomington, Minnesota is staffing up with 6 St. Nicks, including 2 who are black and its first Asian Santa. Visitors in Spanish and Cantonese are provided. Now, working smaller jobs, including house visits, the Elliots have been seeing how rising prices have hit some people hard, and they've lowered their rates at times when they sense that people are struggling. People are having issues just eating, but they don't want to miss out on the experience, Eric said. Sometimes, he said, you'll meet them and be like, you go ahead and hold on to that. I know you worked hard for that. For other clients, the Elliots charge anywhere from $150 to $300 an hour. Charles Graves, a rare professional deaf Santa in New Braunfels, Texas, said through an interpreter that he was inspired to grow his beard and put on the suit in part by awkward encounters with hearing Santas as a child. As a child, I was very excited to receive a gift, but then you just kind of go away and you're like, there's no connection there. Children look at me now and they're like, wow, you know, there's a connection there with the deaf culture. And I can always connect with the hearing kids as well, said Graves, a spry Santa at 52. Graves, who has a day job at a school for deaf children, also received training to be Santa. He works as Santa with interpreters. Breaking in has been difficult and expensive, he says, but this is really something really important to me. By mid-November, he had more than a dozen gigs, including a parade in Santa Paula, California, a mall in Austin, Texas, and at Morgan's Wonderland, a nonprofit accessible theme park in San Antonio. He's also doing some Zoom visits. Among Santa's rising costs this year are his duds. The price of suits from custom to ready-to-wear is up about 25%, said 72-year-old Stephen Arnold, a longtime Santa who heads the more than 2,000-strong International Brotherhood of Real Bittered Santas. Most of the performers I know are raising their rates, mostly due to the cost of transportation, accommodation, and materials, he said. Personally, I'm raising my rates a bit for new clients, but I'm holding my prices this year for my repeat gigs. Arnold, who's in Memphis, Tennessee, charges $250 to $350 an hour. Others in his organization, depending on location and experience, charge anywhere from $100 to $500 an hour, the latter in big cities like Los Angeles. Some, he said, don't know their worth and lowball it at $50 or $75 an hour. As for the pandemic, Arnold hasn't heard a word about it from his clients compared to last year in 2020, when he worked inside a snow globe. The Santas he knows seem unflustered. I'm surprised how few people are concerned about it, Arnold said. I visit my wife twice a day in a nursing facility. I'm diabetic. I mean, most of us are old fat men. Wow, what an interesting thing to think about. All that traveling that goes on just to be Santa in so many locations. Well, as you learned from Leanne Itali's article, there are many special Santas at work. Sydney Page of the Washington Post is going to tell us about a professional black Santa who was once harassed for the black Santa on his lawn in Little Rock, Arkansas. Now, this article appeared in the November 29, 2022 online edition of the News and Observer. And it comes with this photo of Chris Kenney. He became a professional Santa Claus after receiving a racist note a couple of years ago demanding he remove the inflatable black Santa from his front lawn in Little Rock. And since then, he has performed at more than 250 events. Let's learn more. It's been 2 years since Chris Kenney, or Kennedy, received a racist letter demanding that he remove the 7-foot inflatable black Santa on his front lawn in North Little Rock. Please remove your Negro Santa Claus yard decoration, the letter said, signed by an anonymous Santa Claus, read. You should try not to deceive children into believing that I am a Negro. I am a Caucasian white man to you and have been for the past 600 years. Not only did Kennedy keep his black Santa in place, but he also added a second one. His neighbors stood in solidarity, adorning their own front lawns with black Santas. Although Kennedy was deeply touched by the show of community support, he decided there was more he wanted to do to increase representation and put the letter writer, whose identity was never uncovered, in their place. He became a trained Santa Claus, saying he'd never seen another professional black Santa in Arkansas. I couldn't let hatred win, said Kennedy, 35, who is a data verification analyst. You don't like me having a black Santa in my front yard? I will go to be Santa Claus for the entire city. Initially, Kennedy started dressing up as Santa for his then 4-year-old daughter, Emily. He rented his first Santa suit 2 years ago after the hateful letter, and they posed for pictures. I want my daughter to see herself represented, said Kennedy, explaining that that was the reason he put on an inflatable black Santa in his lawn in the first place. Family and friends caught wind of Kennedy's Santa suit, and several people asked if he could take photos with their own children, who also wished to see themselves reflected in Santa. He and his wife, Ida Kennedy, saw a need for a professional black Santa in their community. They wanted to fill the void. People definitely want this, so maybe we should start trying to make this happen next year, Kennedy said to his wife. When the opportunity arose to partake in Santa Camp, an annual program run by the New England Santa Society, Kennedy was on board. Organizers contacted him after hearing his story and explained that they were seeking Santas of various backgrounds to join their group. It was clear that they really wanted to push things forward and be more inclusive, said Kennedy, who had never heard of Santa Camp before. Plus, they were getting tons of requests for black Santas, he added, explaining that businesses and individuals can seek professional Santas on the organization's website. Kennedy said he wanted to hone his skills and become the best black Santa possible. Santa Camp, which is held on a campsite in the New Hampshire woodlands, offered an opportunity to do that. The camp is run annually in late August and is a 2-day crash course covering all things Santa Claus. It teaches prospective professional Santas, as well as Mrs. Clauses and elves, how to play the part. The program is the subject of a new documentary film, Santa Camp, which released on HBO Max earlier in November. The film follows Kennedy, as well as other two Santas, a transgender man and a disabled man, as they learn the tricks of the trade alongside a group of about 100 other Santas, many of whom have worked in the industry for several decades. I'm definitely happy to see more diversity in all aspects, said Kennedy. Although he was the only black Santa at camp, Kennedy said he felt welcomed by the other Santas. As a group, they had several conversations, difficult conversations, about the need for more representation among professional Santas, he said. I could definitely tell that there were people that had to adjust and make sure they were asking the proper questions, Kennedy said. In a particularly poignant scene in the film, Kennedy reads the racist note aloud to his fellow Santas, all of whom appear emotional as he recites the hateful words. I brought this to do this here, he said as he tossed the original letter in a campfire. The Santas collectively clapped and cheered. The moment was also meaningful to the filmmakers who worked on the documentary. Seeing him let go of this incredibly hurtful thing was very moving for me, said Nick Sweeney, the film director. It's incredibly powerful to see Santa represented in ways that reflect America as a whole. It was really brave of him to stand in front of all these strangers and feel comfortable reading something that he didn't really want to read, echoed Stacy Rice, a producer. I love the idea that he turned something so negative in his life into something so beautiful and positive. I'm going to be the Santa for kids that look like me in my area, and coming here has given me the tools to be able to do the best of my abilities, Kennedy told the Santas after burning the letter. During his stay at Santa Camp, Kennedy said he learned about character development and how to make his portrayal of Santa Claus unique to him and reflective of his roots. I'm from the south side of the North Pole, where we get a little more sun, Kennedy said. I eat brownies instead of chocolate chip cookies. I'm injecting who I am into Santa Claus and injecting a lot of my culture into Santa Claus to make my people feel seen, heard, and accepted, he said. Since starting out his professional Santa Claus career last season, Kennedy has done over 250 events, including virtual visits, home and office appearances, holiday gatherings, charity functions, and business parties throughout Arkansas. Being a black Santa, he said, has brought him immense joy. One of the coolest things about the story blowing up is that there were people that were traveling for hundreds of miles, said Kennedy, explaining that several families drove long distances to various festivals to introduce their children to him. I don't think there's any better feeling in the world. Above all, though, I love being able to see the smile on all the children's faces, he said. This year, Kennedy will be the primary Santa Claus for the Southwest Little Rock Christmas Parade, as well as the city of Maumelle Christmas Parade. He was also Santa for the North Little Rock Northern Lights Festival, and that was held on November 19th. It's a huge big deal for me that these towns are doing that, said Kennedy. Sweeney, the film director, said the documentary explores the question, how can one of the most beloved traditions find its place in changing America? Can it adapt? I think what we see in the film, he said, that the answer is yes. Well, we're going to journey to the nation's capital next, where Associated Press writer Darlene Superville reports, "We Are the People" are at the heart of a White House holiday decorations, and her article appeared in the November 29, 2029 online edition of the News and Observer. "We the People" is Joe Biden's holiday theme, with White House decorations designed for the people to see themselves in the tree ornaments, mantle displays, mirrors, and do-it-yourself creations that have turned the mansion's public spaces into a winter wonderland. "The soul of our nation is and has always been We the People," the First Lady said at a White House event, honoring the volunteers who decorated the Thanksgiving weekend. And that is what inspired this year's White House holiday decoration. "The values that unite us can be found all around you, a belief in possibility, an optimism and unity," Joe Biden said. "Room by room, we represent what brings us together during the holidays and throughout the year. Public rooms are dedicated to unifying forces, honoring and remembering deceased loved ones, words and stories, kindness and gratitude, food and traditions, nature and recreation, songs and sounds, unity and hope, faith and light, and children. A burst of pine aroma hits visitors as they step inside the East Wing and come upon trees adorned with mirrored gold star ornaments bearing the names of fallen service members. Winter trees, woodland animals, and glowing lanterns placed along the hallway help give the feeling of walking through snow. Likenesses of Biden family pets, Commander and Willow, the dog and cat, first appear at the end of the hallway before they are seen later in the Vermeil Room, which celebrates kindness and gratitude, and the State Dining Room, which highlights children. Recipes contributed by the many army of volunteer decorators spruce up the China Room's mantle, handwritten ones for Apple Criss and Pizzazelle or Pizzelli, an Italian cookie, are all family recipes shared by the First Lady. Now, aides say she was inspired by people she met while traveling around the country and by the nation's founding documents, the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution. A copy of the Declaration of Independence is on display in the library, while the always show-stopping 300-pound gingerbread White House this year includes a sugar cookie replica of Philadelphia's Independence Hall, where the documents were signed. The executive pastry chef used 20 sheets of sugar cookie dough, 30 sheets of gingerbread dough, 100 pounds of pastelage, 30 pounds of chocolate, and 40 pounds of royal icing to create the gingerbread and sugar cookie masterpiece. A new addition to the White House collection this year is a menorah, which is lit nightly during the 8-day Jewish festival of Hanukkah. White House carpenters built the menorah out of wood that was saved from a Truman-era renovation and sterling silver candle cups. Some 50,000 visitors are expected to pass through the White House for the holidays, including tourists and guests invited to nearly a month's worth of receptions. Among them will be French President Emmanuel Macron, who will meet with President Joe Biden at the White House on Thursday, December 1st, and will be honored at a state dinner, the first of the Biden administration. More than 150 volunteers, including two of the First Lady's sisters, helped decorate the White House during the long Thanksgiving holiday weekend. The decorations include more than 83,000 twinkling lights on trees, garlands, wreaths, and other displays, 77 Christmas trees, and 25 wreaths on the White House exterior. Volunteers also used more than 12,000 ornaments, just under 15,000 feet of ribbon, and more than 1,600 bells. Some of the decorations are do-it-yourself projects that the First Lady hopes people will be encouraged to recreate for themselves, aides say. They include plastic drinking cups turned into bells and tabletop Christmas trees made from foam shapes and dollar store ramekins. Grouping of snowy trees fill corners of the East Room, which reflects nature and recreation, and scenes from four national parks are depicted on each fireplace mantel: Grand Canyon, Yellowstone, Great Smoky Mountains, and Shenandoah. In the Blue Room, the official White House Christmas tree and 180-foot-and-a-half concolor fir from Auburn, Pennsylvania, is decorated to represent unity and hope with handmade renderings of the official birds from all 57 territory states and the District of Columbia. The State Dining Room is dedicated to the next generation, children, and its trees are decorated with self-portrait ornaments made by students of the 2021 Teachers of the Year, ensuring that students, or rather children, see themselves in the decor, the White House said. Hanging from the fireplace in the State Dining Room are the Biden family Christmas stockings. We the People are celebrated again in the Grand Foyer and Cross Hall on the state floor, where metal ribbons are inscribed with the names of all the states, territories, and District of Columbia. As part of joining forces her White House initiative to support military families, Jill Biden was joined by National Guard leaders from across the country, as well as National Guard families. Her late son, Beau Biden, was a major in the Delaware Army National Guard. She met before the event with children from National Guard families, telling them she wanted to hear their stories because you have served right along with your parents, and you deserve to have your courage and your sacrifice recognized, too. The White House noted that the holiday guidebook given to visitors was designed by Daria Peoples, an African-American children's book author who lives in Las Vegas. Peoples is a former elementary school teacher who has written and illustrated a series of picture books to support children of color, including those who have experienced race-based trauma. Well, the spectacular display erupted this holiday in the state of Hawaii, so we're going to change the theme a little. Mauna Loa is the world's largest volcano. Associated Press writer Caleb Jones tells us the erupting Big Island volcano spurs warning for people to prepare. And the story first appeared November 29, 2022, online on the News and Observer. Now, I need to point out, what we'll be reading was early part of this thing, and then we'll do an update about Mauna Loa in just a moment. But first, let's read this. Waves of orange, glowing lava, and smoky ash belched and sputtered Monday, that was November 28th, from the world's largest active volcano in its first eruption in 38 years, and officials told people living on Hawaii's Big Island to be ready in the event of a worst case scenario. The eruption of Mauna Loa wasn't immediately endangering towns, but the U.S. Geological Survey warned the roughly 200,000 people on the Big Island that an eruption can be very dynamic, and the location in advance of lava flows can change rapidly. Officials told residents to be ready to evacuate if lava flows start heading toward populated areas. The eruption began late Sunday night of November 27th, following a series of fairly large earthquakes, said Ken Hahn, scientist in charge at the Hawaiian Volcano Observatory. The areas where lava was emerging, the volcano's summit crater and vents along the volcano's northeast flank, are both far from homes and communities. Officials urged the public to stay away from them, given the dangers posed by lava, which is shooting 100 to 200 feet in the air out of three separate fissures, roughly estimated to be 1 to 2 miles long. Now, volcanic gases wafting out of the vents, primarily sulfur dioxide, are also harmful. Air quality on the Big Island more generally is good right now, but officials are monitoring it carefully, said Dr. Libby Char, the director of the State Health Department. Hahn said air quality could deteriorate while the eruption lasts, which scientists expect will be about 1 to 2 weeks if the volcano follows historic patterns. Now let's go for an update of what has happened since that story was first reported. It says scientists lowered the alert level for the Mauna Loa volcano on Hawaii's Big Island from a warning to a watch on this past Saturday, and the mountain's first eruption in nearly 40 years may soon end. This update is from the News and Observer Online edition, December 12th. And the headline is, Scientists, Hawaii Volcano Eruption Could End Soon. The U.S. Geological Survey's Hawaiian Volcano Observatory said in a bulletin that the eruption on the mountain's northeast rift zone was continuing, but lava output and volcanic gas emissions were greatly reduced. High eruption rates will not resume based on past eruptive behavior, and current behavior suggests that the eruption may end soon, the observatory said. However, an inflationary trend on Mauna Loa's summit is accompanying the decreased activity, and there's a small possibility the eruption could continue at very low eruptive rates. Meanwhile, it said, the lava flow front had stagnated about 2 miles from Saddle Road, the vital highway that residents and tourists alike use to travel between the city of Hilo on the east side of the island and coastal resorts on the west. Scientists said earlier last week that the road was no longer under imminent threat from the lava, allaying fears that previously it could be cut off. Now, all that said, we're going to go to another story that's headlined, Stopping Lava Isn't Easy, Hawaiian History Shows. And this is written by Audrey McAvoy for the Associated Press. Dateline is Honolulu, and this was published in the online edition of the News and Observer December 2nd, 2022. Prayer, bombs, walls, over the decades, people have tried all of them to staunch the flow of lava from Hawaii's volcanoes as it lumbered toward roads, homes, and infrastructures. Now, Mauna Loa, the world's largest active volcano, is erupting again, and lava is slowly approaching a major thoroughfare connecting the Big Island's east and west sides. And once more, people are asking if anything can be done to stop or divert the flow. It comes up every time there's an eruption and there's lava heading towards habited areas or highways. Some people say build a wall or board up, and other people say no, don't, said Scott Rowland, a geologist at the University of Hawaii. Now, I want to point out something. I visited Hawaii back in 2017 and got to see Kilauea before it erupted, and Mauna Loa was kind of rumbling back then from a distance. It was also a winter storm at the top of the mountain where it's located. But at the same time, it kind of gave us this presence. But what we learned in Hawaii, lava flow is given a very kind of a sacred position because it helps the island grow. The more the lava flows out and cools, the bigger the islands become. So you got to keep that thought in mind as you hear about these things, okay? And humans have rarely had, as we get back to the story, have rarely had much success stopping lava, and despite the world's technological advances, doing so is still difficult and dependent on the force of the flow and the terrain. But many in Hawaii also question the wisdom of interfering with nature in Pele, that's the Hawaiian deity of volcanoes and fire. Attempts to divert lava have a long history in Hawaii. In 1881, the governor of Hawaii Island declared a day of prayer to stop lava from Mauna Loa as it headed for Hilo, and the lava kept coming. According to the U.S. Geological Survey, Princess Regent Iliuokalani and her department heads went to Hilo and considered ways to save the town. They developed plans to build barriers to divert the flow and place dynamite along a lava tube to drain the molten rock supply. Princess Ruth Kielalani approached the flow, offered brandy and red scarves, and chanted, asking Pele to stop the flow and go home. The flow stopped before the barriers were built. More than 50 years later, Thomas A. Jagger, the founder of the Hawaiian Volcano Observatory, asked U.S. Army Air Services to send planes to bomb Mauna Loa to vent and disrupt lava channels. Lieutenant Colonel George Patton, who later became famous as a general in World War II, directed planes to drop 2,600-pound demolition bombs, according to a National Park Service account of the campaign. So all kinds of ways to deal with lava flow in Hawaii in its history. And that, my friend, brings us to the end of today's Armchair Traveler. Hope you've enjoyed it and that you'll be with us next time. I'm Mike Edwards, and I've been reading for the North Carolina Reading Service, and I remind you, the content of the program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Armchair Traveler, available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. That's ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, you may call 919-832-5138. The number again, 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.